from cracking down on Medicare fraud to giving paralyzed veterans the ability to walk. Over the past several months, we've been telling you about the great work of this year's Service to America Medals nominees. Now we've come to the conclusion of this year's program. The winners were recognized at a gala in Washington last night. I spoke with this year's Federal Employee of the Year. It's Dr. Rana Haja. She's director of the Division of Bacterial Diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She told me about her work and what's next.
I'm an infectious disease epidemiologist. I mean, our main responsibility is to make sure that infectious diseases are kept basically at bay, you know, for the U.S. and the rest of the world. What we do is we track these infectious diseases usually on a regular basis through our surveillance systems, and whenever we detect any signal that there is a problem going on, an increase in the rate of certain disease, an outbreak, we make sure that we are implementing measures to control the outbreak, if there's an outbreak, and then to also prevent further disease. So our work focuses on prevention of infectious diseases first, and then control of existing infectious diseases problems.
I guess the thing most Americans may not realize is how bad a problem this is. Now we know with the Ebola in the news so much, but most of the horrible diseases that are borne by these different kinds of bacteria or viruses don't really affect vast numbers of Americans as much as they do people in other parts of the world, correct?
Well, that's right. I mean, I think in the U.S., we've gone a really long way in controlling and preventing infectious diseases, and this is due to many reasons. I mean, we do have a much better health infrastructure, but we have better infrastructure and hygiene infrastructure overall. I mean, you know, in the early 1900s in the U.S., we used to see tons of infectious diseases, things that you don't even hear about anymore, you know, like typhoid. And I mean, there were tons of typhoids in the U.S., and typhoid was controlled mainly by implementing a good, water and hygiene system in the U.S., so it wasn't even any specific health measures. But also, you know, we used to see tons of vaccine-preventable diseases. You know, measles and polio were common things, and they used to scare and kill or disable many children around this country. Same thing for meningitis, bacterial meningitis and pneumonia. It was like the nightmare of every parent. So now that we have these excellent vaccines in the U.S. that, you know, many of them are actually supported by the government. I mean, we do have a program, Vaccine for Children, that supports vaccines in the U.S. for uninsured or underinsured children. But, you know, we barely see these. I mean, you know, when we talk about these cases, usually we're talking about, you know, few cases. I mean, we do have every now and then certain diseases.
Sure. So it's a matter of vaccines, but it's also a matter of housing and water supply and a lot of other things that have really developed since the middle of
overall
the 19th century.
Infrastructure, right.
Okay, and so you are headed to Africa to work on the Ebola situation, as many Americans are, and 3,000 members of the military. How do you pin the prospects of keeping that in check, given the conditions there? There might even be there's a couple of promising vaccines, but what about the infrastructure surrounding it? Does that make you optimistic or pessimistic about what we can do there?
This is one of the most challenging epidemics that CDC and the rest of the world has dealt with, actually. When the President Obama was here just a few days ago at CDC, and he, you know, in his statement, he said that this is the largest international response that CDC has ever been part of. Actually, it is going to continue to be a challenge. We try to be optimistic, and we try to put our best to control it. But the main problem is the epidemiology of the virus has changed. We used to see it mainly in rural areas in Africa, where it was easier to control because it was mainly like small villages, and you could quarantine and do much easier tracking of the cases. And now that it is in urban environments, it made it very difficult to track and to control. But also the basic problem is the health infrastructure overall and public health infrastructure in these poor countries is really, really limited. So you need to put a lot of resources in just ramping up activities, especially in hospital settings like infection control, et cetera, but also basic public health capacity for surveillance, which has always been a challenge in these countries.
Now, your SAMMY's award this year was for work you've done already, and that has to do with the HIB initiative, saving 7 million children with no access to vaccines, you and your team. Just briefly remind us what you did in that effort.
Sure. The HIB initiative, or HIB actually, is the name of a bacteria called Haemophilus influenza type B. And this bacteria is one of the main causes of bacterial meningitis as well as severe pneumonia in children. I mean, we have two major organisms that are responsible for meningitis and pneumonia in kids, and it is the HIB and the pneumococcus. So, for HIB in particular, there's been a very good vaccine that's actually was available in the U.S. now starting in 1990. I remember this date very clearly because my daughter was born in 1990, shortly after the vaccine became available and was recommended by our advisory committee on immunization practices here in this country. And she was among the first kids in the U.S. to get it. We're talking back 1990, so my daughter is going to turn 24 soon. But in many of the developing countries, this vaccine was not available initially. I mean, it was mainly available to developed countries. And when the vaccine became available, the country still didn't include it in their immunization programs because it was very expensive for them. They really were not aware of how much disease they have. So there were many obstacles for these countries to adopt the vaccine. And as a result, their kids continued to die from meningitis and severe pneumonia. I mean, it was estimated that about 400,000 mm-hmm. kids each year around the world died from just this one bacteria.
We're speaking with Dr. Rana Haja. She is the director of the Division of Bacterial Diseases at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And let me just ask you a personal question. When you're looking through a microscope, say, at a virus or a bacterium that you would like to eradicate or at least prevent the danger of it, do you look at that thing squirming around in there and say, I'm going to get you? Does it get personal when you're attacking these bugs?
It does at some point. You know, it's it becomes it does become a bit personal. But you know, one has to be careful to also look at this problem in a very systematic way and try to do problem solving the way we usually do with other conditions of public health importance. Because, you know, sometimes it's important to also realize the limits of what we can do. I mean, in the case of this particular bacteria, you know, our challenge was to not to like really force the vaccine on the countries, but to help them make a decision based on the evidence available of whether they need the vaccine or not. So, you know, in this case, we had to provide countries with the data because many of them did not really have access to the data, or even if there was data, they didn't fully understand the significance of that for their own country. So we were working, this initiative in particular was funded by an organization called Gavi, which is the Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization. It's based in Geneva, public-private organization that really focuses on making sure countries in developing countries have access to these life-saving vaccines. And in 2005, actually in 2000 when Gavi started, they were offering the vaccine, the HIB vaccine, for free to these countries. And even though it was offered for free, very few countries, were willing to take it. So it was kind of puzzling to them, like, why? I mean, it's completely free. If cost is an issue, why aren't they adopting the vaccine? So this is why they decided to fund this HIB initiative, which was a consortium of four organizations. The project was actually based at Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, but also the key partners were the CDC, the World Health Organization, and the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. And as a team, we worked together with the 72 countries that Gavi wanted to access to help them make these decisions. This involved a lot of direct, a lot of travel to many mm-hmm. of these countries, a lot of direct communication, ensuring they have all the pieces of evidence they need, and also, you know, first of all, understanding what are the challenges they are dealing with.
And a final question, as you work around the world on these terrible problems and something that, again, is largely shielded from the United States, in many ways, the veneer of civilization is pretty thin. What do you think Americans need to know about this whole effort?
Well, I think Americans, you know, need to know why it is important for us to be involved in these projects. Sometimes, you know, on a quick look at, you know, one would probably tend to think is like, you know, why are we even doing this? And, you know, first, you know, we're doing it because it is the right thing to do. I mean, we have these vaccines that are great, and we know they are preventing, you know, millions of lives in the U.S. You know, why not making sure that other children all over the world have access to it? But also, very importantly, you know, helping countries develop, you know, having healthier children is really important for the development of these countries. As you probably know, infant mortality rate is really one of the main indicators of, you know, the status of development of a country, because it, you know, countries that have high rates of mortality among their infants usually have many other problems that, you know, make them, mm-hmm. you know, make them not the most stable countries, not the best partners, you know. So I think ensuring countries, you know, or children in these countries have healthy lives is really, you know, not just a global responsibility, and I think a very important role for the U.S. to do, but it's also important for our national security overall. And as we have seen recently with the Ebola outbreak, the fact that these countries had such poor health infrastructure is becoming very quickly a global public health emergency and a threat to anyone, especially with the current status of travel. I mean, you know, anyone from anywhere in the world can be in the U.S. within a day.